Chapter 28. Rebirth. Eric shivered. Darkmoor lay under a blanket of snow, though it was beginning to melt as summer reasserted itself. Eric turned his back to the wall, watching the city begin to come back to life, as the soldiers of the armies of the East cleared the streets of any stragglers from the invading host, who had tried to hole up in the burned-out buildings. The eastern gates had been opened at dawn by Eric and a patrol who had easily reached them. The few elements of the invaders' army that was still in the city gave them wide berth. They were too tired, cold, hungry, and dispirited to offer much opposition after the sudden snowfall. Eric turned to watch as new units of the king's army marched slowly into the city. His own men were checking in, slowly, as Patrick dispatched newly arrived soldiers up and down Nightmare Ridge, and Eric expected Jadow, Harper, and the other surviving sergeants to be in Darkmoor soon. Word had arrived that the dwarves and elves were also returning home. A familiar voice said, "Von Darkmoor!" Eric saw Jadow Shati standing below, waving.
"How did we do?"
"Well enough, until this damnable snow arrived. I nearly froze my backside off."
Eric hurried down the flight of steps next to the gatehouse and gripped his old friend's hand. Wanting to get the bad news over first, he said,
"How many?"
"Too many," said Jadow. "I won't have exact numbers for a few days, but too damn many."
He turned and watched as cavalry from Salador entered, banners flapping in the morning air.
"We lost Harper 2 nights ago."
"Damn," said Eric.
Jadow said,
"We're running short of sergeants, Eric."
"Well, we'll just have to make sure you stay alive."
"What are we to do next?"
"The prince'll tell us."
Jadow said,
"Will we rest?"
"I think Patrick intends to let the Eastern Army drive the invaders down the hill a bit. So, until you hear otherwise, find a billet near the palace and get the men some food and blankets."
"Yes, sir," said Jadow. "They like that."
Eric said, "Send word to the citadel where you are when you're situated. I've got some things to do."
"Sir,"
said Jadow, and he turned and hurried off. Eric returned his attention to the eastern gate, and after a few minutes of watching the procession of brightly coloured uniforms, clean horses, and unbloodied weapons, he turned and started walking back toward the citadel. Slowly, the city began to revive. 3 days after the last of the invaders were reported to be safely on the far side of Ravensburg, Eric heard a familiar sweet voice from the courtyard.
"Eric!"
He spun, and in the wagon pulling into the castle, Kitty sat behind Rue and his wife, next to their children and the Jacobi family. Eric almost knocked over a squire as he raced down the steps to the courtyard, and was almost knocked over in turn as his wife flew into his arms. He kissed her and held her. Then he pushed her back to arm's length and said,
"What you doing here?"
He looked at Rue.
"You were supposed to have everyone safely down at Malak's Cross."
"Well, we almost got there,"
said Rue.
He jumped down and said, "Then we ran into this army, and given the situation, I judged it pretty safe tagging along behind them."
"Where's Lewis?"
"Nathan. My mother."
"They're on their way," said Rue. "I sent them down to Malak's Cross with a list while I stayed close to the army. They should get here tomorrow."
"A list of what?"
"Things to bring to Darkmoor," said Rue.
He motioned for Carly and the others to get out. He tapped Eric on the chest as Kitty kissed his cheek.
"You and I have suffered a great deal of financial loss, my friend."
Eric laughed and kissed Kitty again. Then he said,
"That money I lent you, I never expected to see it again."
"Well, be that as it may," said Rue, "you're a partner."
He threw his arm around Carly's waist
and Helen Jacoby came to stand next to them. "We're all partners."
"In what?"
asked Eric. "Avery, Jacoby and Von Darkmoor. Milo and Nathan are loading up in Mallock's Cross with things that'll be needed here, and I expect that shortly we'll have a brisk trade set up."
Eric laughed. "Rue, you'll never change."
Carly said,
"He's changed."
She blushed.
"We're going to have another baby."
Eric laughed. "Well, go inside and I'll see what I can do about getting us something to eat."
They headed for the keep, and Eric looked at Kitty.
"You have no idea how wonderful you look."
She said,
"No, but I know how wonderful you look."
Eric said, "Let's eat, then I'll show you where I'm staying."
He put his arm around her, and they slowly walked to the keep, just enjoying the nearness of each other. Eric entered the room, and Patrick said,
"Captain, is your family settled in?"
Everyone in the room laughed. Eric saw Owen, Kalis, Aruta, and the other surviving nobles of the Western Realm in the conference room, and saw Pug and Miranda standing in an anteroom beyond. Eric blushed.
"Yes, sir."
He had introduced Kitty to the prince the night before. It had taken a messenger pounding on Eric's door with a summons from the prince to get Eric out of Kitty's arms this morning. Nathan, Milo, Rosalind, and the others had arrived and found their way to the keep. Rue was off bartering and making deals, so the prince had sent for Eric to find quarters for his family. Patrick said,
"I've got enough governance and military matters before me to confound 2 kings and 12 dukes, Eric. But I wanted to take care of one issue before things dragged out much longer."
The door opened, and Eric tensed as he saw a soldier escorting Matilda into the chamber. The old Dowager Baroness bowed before the prince, but when her eyes met Eric's, they burned with hatred.
"Milady," said Patrick, "I wanted you here so I could put a certain matter to rest."
"Highness?"
asked Matilda.
"It's fairly common knowledge you harbour Eric von Darkmoor some ill will,"
Matilda interrupted.
"Don't use that name. He doesn't deserve to be called von Darkmoor."
"Madam," said Patrick, slamming his hand on the table, "you forget yourself. I forgive much because of your pain, but speak cautiously."
The old woman almost bit her tongue to keep from speaking, but she bowed her head slightly. Patrick's tone was ice.
"Your late husband pointedly refused to deny Eric that name. More, he has earned it. You will put aside any ill will you have against Captain von Darkmoor. He is my man and serves me. If any harm comes to him that I can trace back to your offices, madame, your rank or family connections will do nothing to spare you my wrath. Is that clear?"
"Yes," she said in tones as cold as the prince's. Then she looked at Eric, and with barely controlled rage, she said,
"Well, bastard, there's nothing to stop you now, is there? With Manfred dead, and you the only one of Otto's bastards to wear his name, your friend here can name you Baron now."
"Madam, how dare you?"
Patrick motioned for a guard to take Matilda away.
"Your Highness," said Eric, "please forgive me, but let her stay. There's something I need to say to her."
Patrick didn't look pleased, but he said,
"What?"
Eric looked at Matilda.
"Madam, you've hated me without knowing me for my entire life. I can only blame my father's weakness for other women as the cause. Though knowing you as briefly as I have, I can now understand it."
She bristled at this.
"Perhaps if you'd been loving, kind, and gentle, he might still have strayed, and there's no fault in you. It doesn't matter. My father's dead, and so are your sons. But I will not be the next Baron of Darkmoor. Eric looked directly at the old woman and locked gaze with her. "You have a grandson." Matilda said,
"What? What nonsense is this?"
Eric said, "No nonsense. He's Stefan's son." Matilda's hand came to her mouth, and moisture gathered in her eyes as she asked,
"Where is he?"
"Here, in the castle."
"Who is his mother? I want to see him."
Eric motioned for a guard and said, "Go to the inn across the bridge and find Milo, the innkeeper from Ravensburg, and his daughter Rosalind. Bring them and the baby here." Patrick said, "Somewhere else, Captain, if you don't mind." Eric said, "Bring them to the Great Hall." Patrick said, "Madame, please wait for them there. I'll send Eric along in a minute." After Matilda had departed, Patrick, Prince of Krondor, said,
"Captain."
Eric said,
"Highness?"
"Out there," said Patrick, "just a few miles beyond the walls of this city, is the new western boundary of the Kingdom of the Isles. I'm the Prince of Krondor, and Krondor no longer exists. While all of us here are aware of the terrible destruction we avoided, this war is far from over. I have a commission for you, should you be willing to accept."
"Sir?"
"Retake the Western Realm. Get me back my principality." Eric looked at Kalis, who shook his head.
"I'm going home," he said softly. He glanced across the room, through the door, to where Pug and Miranda stood watching from the balcony. "I made a promise."
Owen said, "You are the new Eagle of Krondor, Eric." As Eric stood still in amazement, Patrick said, "That is, as soon as you recapture my city." Bitterly, he said, "Or what's left of it, so we can begin rebuilding." "That's the first order. We winter here, rest and refit, and then we move to Krondor in the spring. We drive out what's left of this invading army and rebuild. After that, we will take it a day at a time." Eric knew the task before him was tremendous. Owen said, "But you and your wife can have a quiet winter together before we start." Eric stood silently for a moment, then said,
"Highness."
Whatever momentary satisfaction at the acknowledgement that Eric was now in charge of Kalis's special command was quickly lost as the prince continued.
"Aruta,"
he said, and Lord Venkar stepped forward from the corner where he had been standing. "I need a new Duke of Krondor, and you're it. Father will ratify the choice as soon as I send word. You and those sons of yours are going to be very important to me. Oh, by the way, James and Dash are now barons of the court."
Aruta bowed.
"Highness."
It was obvious that holding the office held by his father was a course of honour to Aruta. Eric noticed the strain in Aruta's features and realized the pain he felt because of his parents' and uncle's death. Then he grinned, and Eric caught a fleeting glimpse of Aruta's father as he said, "I think the boys will find their new titles amusing." Patrick smiled at Aruta.
"No doubt."
He turned his attention back to the list before him. "Greylock, you're the new Knight Marshal of Krondor. Until I find someone better."
"Won't be hard, Highness. So please don't dawdle too long," said Owen.
Patrick leaned forward and softly said, "Well, you'd better hope it is, because if I do, you and I are going to have words over you yanking me about the way you did. I don't take kindly to being manhandled, even if you were right."
"Understood, Highness," said Owen gravely.
Patrick said, "We've got to find out if we have any navy left before spring. Eric,
I want you to send some of your black shirts to Sarth and have them snoop around. See if any of our ships survived.
Kalis said, If we do find any of them, Highness, where do we tell them to go? Illith?
Patrick looked at a map.
No, I'm going to want to open trade with the far coast and the sunsets as quickly as possible. Tell them to make for that harbour Lord Vicor created down in Shandon Bay. It was supposed to be a temporary anchorage, but we'll have to turn it into a permanent one.
Patrick had been told that Krondor's harbour was now impassable, and would remain so for at least a year.
In fact, that's what we'll name it, Port Vicor.
The appointment and redistribution of the newly re-emerging Western Realm continued. Outside the chamber, Miranda and Pug watched. Kalis left the conference and came over to them. He said, Father and I leave tonight.
Kalis looked at Miranda.
You said I must do you one more favour?
Miranda said, Yes.
She slipped her arm from around Pug's waist and took Kalis aside.
There's a woman in Elvendar. Her name is Elia.
I don't know that name, said Kalis.
She's from across the sea. Her husband died, and she is alone in a strange place with her sons.
Kalis's eyes narrowed slightly, and he said,
Twin boys?
Yes.
I've seen them, teaching the other children to play football, said Kalis. They are beautiful children.
Miranda said, I don't know the ways of your people more than you've told me, but I sense something in her. She and you have much in common. Seek her out, that's all I ask.
Kalis said, We are both within our home, yet we are outsiders.
Miranda touched his cheek. Not for much longer, I think.
Tomas came down the stairs and said, Son, it's time.
Yes, father, said Kalis.
Pug came up to his boyhood friend and said, Let it not be years before we see each other again.
Agreed, said Tomas. They embraced.
And you? Do you return to Sorcerer's Isle?
No, there are things that Miranda and I can do here to help. For a while, at least.
When you have time, come visit.
We will.
Tomas and Kalis left, and Miranda came to stand beside Pug. After a moment of silence, she said,
Well?
Pug said,
What?
Don't you have something to say?
Pug laughed.
Such as?
She punched him in the chest.
Younger men, why are you all so thick-headed?
Pug grabbed her and pulled her to him.
What would you have me say? You are my life, Miranda. You fill up a place I thought would never again know happiness.
Stay with me. Marry me.
Miranda said, One thing.
What?
He asked, half playfully, half concerned.
I want a baby.
Pug's mouth fell open as he stepped back.
A baby?
He blinked.
How? You're 200 years old.
She grimaced. The life stone. I'm young again, and I'm ready to be a mother.
She grabbed the front of his robe and pulled him toward her.
Kissing him, she said,
Unless you'd rather I find someone else.
No, he said. It's just...
I know, she said softly, but I regret not having children the first time around. And now I have another chance.
Her voice dropped, and she said, Beloved, I know you're suffering over the death of your children, and you've spoken about the pain of outliving them. But this time it will be different. I promise you.
Looking in her eyes, he said, I have no doubt.
Good, she said, leading him down the stairs to the quarters Manfred had set aside for them. Let's go make a baby. Pug laughed.
Rue, Nathan, and the others had accompanied Eric to the keep when Rosalind, Milo, and Gerd had been summoned. They entered, Rue with his usual bravado, the others more timidly. None but Rue had ever been inside a great lord's audience hall before, even one somewhat worse for the wear of recent battle. Matilda moved slowly to stand before Rosalind, who held the little boy on her hip. Gerd's attention was drawn by a necklace the Baroness wore, and he reached for it. Rosalind gently held his hand, and Matilda said,
No, let him play with it.
He's teething, the young woman said softly. Randolph, her husband, put a reassuring hand on Rosalind's shoulder. Matilda's eyes began to brim with tears, and she said,
He looks so much like his father.
Rosalind blushed and said,
He's a good baby.
Matilda turned to Eric.
What do you suggest?
Her manner was again controlled and commanding. Eric said,
I suggest nothing. Stefan was barren when he fathered Gerd. He saw Rosalind lower her eyes at the reminder of the rape, and Randolph's hands tightened ever so slightly in reassurance.
It's clear to me. Gerd is Baron of Darkmoor.
Then Eric's tone became steel.
And Patrick will name me baronial regent.
The woman's eyes widened as Eric could almost read her thoughts. It was a ploy for Eric to seize control of the barony. But before she could speak, Eric said,
But I have duties in the West, so I must delegate someone else to conduct the business of the duchy.
He crossed to stand before his nemesis.
You govern here, milady. Let Rosalind and her husband live here, or in the city as they choose, and see the boy daily. But you make him the next Baron of Darkmoor.
Then he lowered his voice even more. But do a better job than you did with Stefan, or I'll be back. The woman's face was a mask.
Manfred was a good enough man, despite your disagreements with him. He could have been a good teacher for the boy. Treat Gerd as you should have treated your sons, and you and I'll have no issue. But should any harm come to him, I'll be back. Is that clear?
Matilda looked past Eric and saw the baby smile. She stepped toward him, saying,
Let me hold him.
Rosalind handed Gerd to the old woman. Then she said,
Gerd, this is your grandmother.
Eric left the hall and Rue followed after. Outside, Rue said,
Is this going to work?
Eric said, It better. Then he turned to his friend and said,
For the next year or so, you're going to be around here like flies on dung, so if anything happens that I should know about, get word to me.
Rue grinned. And where are you going to be?
Eric smiled and shook his head. Recapturing a kingdom, it seems.
The herald blew a trumpet, and Patrick said,
Well, let's go talk.
Word arrived that morning that a large force of heavy cavalry was moving up from the south, slogging along the roads from the west of Dorgin, as a heavy rain had struck the day before. Scouts reported that the banner of Kesh flew over the force that made its way toward Darkmoor. Now they stood outside the gate as the evening sun set, and Patrick was riding with Eric, Owen, Pug, and Aruta, to see what a Keshian army was doing this far north.
Maybe they came to help,
suggested Nacor, as he walked alongside Pug's horse. Somehow I doubt that, said Pug. They reached the Keshians, and one of Darkmoor's men, acting as herald, said,
Who comes before Krondor's prince?
The Keshian herald said,
"Highness, my lords, I have the honor to present his most esteemed lord, General Beshan Solan."
"General," said Prince Patrick, "may we inquire as to your presence in our kingdom? Are you perhaps lost?"
"Highness," said the general, "let us be brief. It is wet, and I would like to return to my camp. We have closely watched this invasion, as you have provided us with remarkably candid intelligence regarding the enemy, their disposition and intent. We did, however, incur losses as they attempted to expand into territory occupied by our forces,"
the leather-faced old soldier said.
"So, my master, his most imperial majesty, has decided that the former boundaries between Great Kesh and your kingdom are no longer agreeable to us."
Patrick looked ready to explode. "You dare ride into my own principality and inform me the Empire is trying to annex territories beyond those agreed to?"
"In a word, yes."
"Well, General, look around. It may come to your attention that the bulk of the armies of the East are currently here in Darkmoor. Come spring, I can order them southward just as easily as westward. I'm certain I can convince my father that we can wait a year to reclaim the Western Realm while we sort out some Keshian adventurers." The general seemed unimpressed.
"Highness, with all due respect, your Western armies are scattered and decimated. Your Eastern armies cannot stay here long, else you'll face difficulties on your Eastern borders. You have no significant navy left of which to speak. In short, while you could most certainly create some difficulties for Great Kesh for a short while, in the long run, to what advantage?"
He took out a rolled-up parchment and said,
"Here are the terms of a treaty my imperial master sends to your father."
Patrick nodded, and a soldier took the scroll from the Keshian general. Patrick nodded to Aruta, who took it, opened it, and read it.
"Damn," he said after a moment.
"My lord,"
said Patrick. "They want it all. We keep everything from where we sit to the east. Kesh claims all lands between the Great Star Lake and the Teeth of the World, west of the Calastius Mountains."
"Kesh's historical boundaries, as you know," said the general, "before the unfortunate war with the rebellious confederacy to the south forced us to abandon our hereditary lands."
"Hereditary lands," said Patrick. "Not in the worst fever dream of your most deluded monarch, general." Aruta said, "What of Queg and the free cities of Natal?" The general said,
"Kesh will deal with her recalcitrant children in time."
Patrick said, "If you will be so kind as to wait, my lord, I will pen a reply to your imperial master. And you can tell Deegai, for me, that the formal declaration of war from my father will arrive shortly." Nakor said,
"Highness."
"What?"
snapped Patrick, obviously close to a rage.
"I think I can help."
Pug said, "What do you have in mind?"
"Watch."
Nakor took out the Surani transport sphere and vanished.
"What is that odd little man up to?"
asked the prince. Pug said, "I don't know, but he usually manages to come up with unexpected results. I think we can afford to wait a little while." Patrick said,
"Very well."
A few minutes later, Nakor was back.
"Look to the south," he said.
The entire company of officers from both sides did as Nakor bade, and to the south a vast column of ruby light pierced the sky.
"What is that?"
asked the Keshian general. "That is Stardock," said Pug.
"Stardock?" said the general. "That's impossible. Stardock is hundreds of miles from here.
Nevertheless, said Pug, that light is coming from Stardock. Nakor said,
It's a demonstration of power. It's to let you know there are 700 very angry magicians down there who don't like the way you honor treaties.
700, said Pug. I thought there were 400. Nakor grinned.
We invited some of your old Surani friends to come visit.
Pug rolled his eyes and said, 300 black robes?
Well, maybe a few less.
The general said,
700 magicians?
Angry magicians, said Eric. And one very angry prince, with the armies of the East camped 10 miles from here, added Patrick. Come spring, you can expect a two-front war, General. And from the look of that little demonstration, you don't even want to consider what that means for the Empire. The Keshian general looked around and at last said,
What do you propose, Highness?
Patrick said, We'll make it simple. You return to the old border, and come spring, my father's diplomats and your emperors can start renegotiating the boundary between our two realms all over again.
The old boundary?
Yes, said Patrick. We take back Shamata. His yell caused his horse to turn completely around. You think on this as you ride south, and you'd better be moving that way at dawn, else I'll turn my army south and start marching that way myself, rain or no rain. Do you understand? The general glanced over his shoulder and saw the red light in the sky.
I understand, Highness. Good.
Patrick turned his horse and rode off, Eric and Greylock at his side. Pug waited as the Keshians returned the way they came, and Patrick rode off. When only the two of them remained in the street, Pug on his horse and Nakor at his side, Pug asked, Nakor, what did you promise Charms and the others to get them to pull that stunt? Nakor smiled.
I gave them Stardock.
You what? Asked Pug. Nakor said,
Well, you told me to think of something.
Pug asked softly, You gave away my duchy?
I had to. Independence from both the kingdom and Kesh was the only thing I could think of that they'd fight for. And the Surani like having a neutral way into Midkamia, too, which is why they helped. Either way, though, you lose Stardock to the magicians or to the Empire. This way is better, I think.
But you gave away a duchy. What am I going to tell the king? Nakor shrugged.
You'll think of something.
He grinned.